If you have any issues with your car, your truck, your van, and you need to bring it in for service, but before you do, you'd kind of like to know what you're up against. Give Nick Stoffel, ASC Certified Technician at Lloyd's Automotive, your question via text or phone call this morning. Denny Long here with Nick. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, Denny.
You're not off with some sports event with your kids, I assume, this holiday weekend.
No, like we said before we're on there, it's kind of nice to have a weekend with no running from one side to the other side of town.
Yeah, but I bet you have other things to do, though, to fill that time. Just a guess. If you are new to the show, thanks for checking us out. We get new listeners all the time. Thanks to folks like Nick who join us every week to help our CCO listeners out with any kind of car issues. And as we like to say, before you bring it in for service, you might want to know what could be ailing. And Nick will give it a shot of giving an analysis over the radio. So if you call us or text us, let me give you the number for either 651-461-9226. Well, just a reminder, Nick will be with us till just about 7:45. So our time goes by very quickly. So if you have a question in mind, we'd love to hear from you sooner rather than later. So 651-461-9226. Nick, they're already coming in there this morning as we were getting underway here. And let me see if I can find it. Okay, so Denny and Nick. They love the show. Thank you. This is a Chrysler Town & Country 2009. The headlights are very foggy. Should they try a lens restoration, or is it better just to replace the entire headlight assembly? Now, you and your crews there at Lloyd's, we've talked about this in the past. Is that repairable, generally speaking?
Yeah, so we do have a procedure which takes a good 45 minutes to an hour per headlight assembly, which essentially you're kind of sanding and removing that oxidation off the outside of the lens. After years of the sun beating down on that, the plastic starts to deteriorate and gets that film or that fogginess to it. There are products that we see online that you can try. Will those products work? They might help some. But to really kind of get through all of that, it takes a long time. You need to have all the right tooling and equipment to kind of work your way through that is the best way to put it. Now, obviously, as vehicles get older, some makes and models, you might be able to find an aftermarket lens that's fairly reasonable. So I'd probably do my research, see what's available for my particular vehicle. If it's somewhat affordable and reasonable, I might try that. Or take it into one of your local shop or dealership and see if they offer the procedure to go through and resurface those lenses.
I guess it. I don't know. I have not had the chance to do that myself or the need to do that. But there are a lot of do-it-yourselfers out there, kits that people have tried with some success as far as my reading is concerned. So, I mean, it can be worth a try, right?
Absolutely, and I would say attention to detail. If you're the type of person that's willing to sit there and kind of work your way through and cover the whole surface, you know, it's not a quick where you're putting wax on and waxing off and it's gone. It's going to take some time. So if you're willing to commit the time and attention to detail, I think you can be very successful. If you're the mindset where I don't have that kind of time, I'm looking for a quick easy on, easy off, probably not the best plan for you.
Right. All right, again, 651-461-9226, any kind of a car care question you may have. Here's another one that just came in. I left a light on inside my vehicle and I had to have a jump last Friday. Since then, it seems to not start immediately as it used to. It does start after just a couple of seconds, but not the immediate start that it usually does. I did get a new battery 4 or 5 years ago. Do you think it's time for a new battery? I'm thinking you might be saying, yeah.
I think you're correct. And as I say, you can answer this one. Yeah, I think in our climate, and we've had a cooler summer and we had a mild winter, so it hasn't been the hardest with all those deep extremes. But with time and with the vehicles that are on the road today, there's a lot more of a demand on those batteries. So if you're getting 4 or 5 years, I think you should be more than satisfied with that. And I'd say it's probably time to pick up a battery sooner than later.
And we've talked about batteries before, quality batteries, and I assume that, and I know you guys at Lloyd's put in just excellent batteries, because I've had a few over the years. But is there a difference in, you know, does the money, the price really make the difference in batteries?
You know, I'm going to say yes, you know, kind of like with everything, whether it's oil, it's a filter, it's a brake pad. We only install OE-like quality or OE, you know, if all possible, the part, I guess. But, you know, with a battery, for example, we're going to use something that has the correct ratings. A little test that I like to use is the weight of the battery. You know, as energy changes, as we have more recycled items, we have more budget-conscious items, the amount of lead in a battery really kind of determines how long it's going to last. To some extent, obviously, your driving habits and the type of vehicle will affect that also. But, you know, it used to be that batteries were, you know, 45, 50 pounds, and it seems like in some cases they've gotten lighter over the years, and I do believe it's because the amount of lead that they're using isn't the same, which is going to affect the life of that battery. So when you're looking at the specifications of a battery, you'll see that the weight might vary a little bit, and that could be one sign to tell you the more expensive batteries tend to weigh more, probably because there's more lead in it. So, you know, my opinion is something has the same specifications as the car's battery when it was new, possible, and that should give you the same life, that four-year, five-year time frame. Sometimes with lesser expensive batteries, you might just get maybe 2-3 years. So I would be very careful.
Very good. Let's grab a phone call or two. I think Ginny's calling in from Edina this morning. Ginny, good morning. What is your question for Nick?
Oh, hi. I have a Buick, and it started fine. As I'm driving down the street, it kind of jerked, and then I went a little bit further, and it gave a little jerk and just died, and then it restarted again and went a little bit and just died, and nothing showed up on the computer. What could cause something like that?
Well, it seemed to me that maybe there's a sensor of some sort, like an input, a crank sensor, or something that's telling the engine or telling the computer what's going on with the engine. And if that sensor's not reading properly, the information to the computer is not accurate. So then the computer becomes confused. Maybe it has a little bit of a misfire or that hesitation that you felt. And then maybe something happened where it didn't like it at all, so it just shut the car off. So I would say, you know, I understand maybe there's no light on now, but if you can get the vehicle running, have somebody test drive it. They can bring their scan tool with for the test drive, read the data that's happening. Hopefully that hesitation, that jerking that you described will happen for them. They can take a snapshot, which is like a picture of the information at that moment, see what is happening. So, you know, see if there's something that's giving out or not reading properly that can lead them down the path of testing a certain part of that system to figure out why it's doing that installing. Last thing you want is to have whatever it is actually just fail, then you'll be stranded.
Absolutely. Good idea. Well, good luck with that, Ginny. Thanks for the call. We're going to take a break. I want to alert Ron and Prior Lake. We're going to be next on the phone, and we have some text messages to get answered as well here in our CCO Car Care show this Saturday morning. In the Twin Cities, we're now at 65 degrees. We're heading to near 80, and of course, there are chances of showers. We'll be back here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show here every Saturday right after the 7 o'clock news break. Denny Long here along with ASC Certified Technician, and he runs a place called Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. Nick, for folks that maybe need the help of Lloyd's, how do we find you guys there?
You know, Denny, as always, if you need some advice or something you want to talk it through before you take it into your shop or dealership, you give us a call, 651-228-1316. If you happen to be on Grand, we're at 982 Grand in St. Paul. Stop and say hi. And as always, please check out our website at lloydsautomotive.net.
Always do that, and we'll get you that information before Nick leaves us, which is about 7:45 this morning. So any kind of a car care question, let's hear from you, either by text or phone, 651-461-9226. Speaking of phones, we promised Ron he'd be next, calling in from Prior Lake. Hi, Ron. Thanks for waiting. What is your question for Nick?
Yeah, Nick. Say, I'm in the market for a new car for the first time in many years, and I'm looking at a situation where I'm a senior citizen driving about 7,000-8,000 miles a year, and from a durability and a reliability standpoint, I'm considering a hybrid, you know, like RAV4. And I've heard different things about low mileage with those cars. So I was looking at that compared to a Boxer Forester or Boxer Subaru Forester. And I was wondering if you could comment on terms of the hybrid in terms of, you know, with low mileage and that just the Boxer, you know, type engine compared to a conventional type engine for durability and reliability.
So, you know, I would say my opinion, for the most part, any vehicle you're buying today, you're going to be fine. You know, I think you should drive both makes and models, see what you like, what fits you the best. You know, I always use the example, do you like Pepsi or Coke, right? I mean, it's, you know, one is the same than the other. Obviously, the RAV4 and the Forester are two different types of vehicles, and the engines are different, and having the hybrid is a difference also. But I don't think I'd be concerned about the hybrid. I think they've done a very good job of making those vehicles reliable. I know you can read many opinions online, but I would say in our experience, we don't have any issues with them. I would also say if you're even if you're only doing 7,000-8,000 miles annually on a drive, I would say twice a year you should still change the oil. It might seem a little excessive. I do agree that the oil itself is not going to be used up and not going to be a problem. However, with heating and cooling of our climate, you're going to get some condensation in that oil, which can create sludge. So regardless of which vehicle you do go with, I think if you do a, you know, spring and fall type service on the vehicle, and, you know, even in the months where you're not driving as much, if you have the possibility to take a little longer drive to help kind of clear out the cobwebs, let the vehicle fully heat up. I often use the example, if you're going to the grocery store, take the long way. You know, don't put yourself out where you're going to get stranded. But from time to time, doesn't matter the make or the model, the car needs to stretch its legs a bit to kind of make sure everything is functioning and working as designed. So, but back to the make and model, I don't have a problem with either one. I think both of those vehicles are probably on the top of our list. I would think you'd be happy with either. I would just go drive them both and see which fits you the best.
Yeah, good idea. Again, here's our phone number. It's also our text number, 651-461-9226. Texter says this, I have a 2019 Nissan Altima. The AC works intermittently. Uh-oh. Sometimes cool air, sometimes warm air. What could cause this?
Well, it sounds like it's cycling, which could be a couple reasons. Maybe it's low on refrigerant. If it's low on refrigerant, there's pressure switches that are going to shut it off. So it's working for a few moments. It sees the pressures hit either too high or too low. It's going to cycle it off because it doesn't like what it sees. The other issue could be maybe there's something itself with the compressor. It's overheating or something like that, or a relay that's getting too hot and just opening up because it's not able to keep up, I guess is the best way to put it. And looking at the forecast, it looks like things might start to warm up here. So if you're thinking about air conditioning, it hasn't been great, you probably want to get in somebody's schedule sooner than later because it's going to go from being fairly busy to a couple weeks behind where you might be uncomfortable.
Yeah. Tell you what, before we break for weather, let's grab another phone call. I think Vince calling in from Coon Rapids this morning. Hi, Vince. What's your question for Nick?
I don't have a question. I think I just turned it on a while ago, and you were talking about, I think, foggy headlights. I used a kit before, and it took forever, and I read in paper at one time, use the bug spray off, spray it on, wipe it off, and I'll tell you, it worked great and lasted longer than when I used the kit.
Huh, interesting. Leave it to our listeners, Nick. As you know, they always come up with some good ideas. You think about the chemicals we use, auto chemicals, to remove the bugs. Well, here you're kind of two in one. You can get off bug spray. And maybe it does both. Cleaning headlights. May have to try that.
I would just caution that people would make a small sample size. Maybe if you're willing to try that,
good point.
Maybe just do a little corner of it and let it give it a day or two and see how it works for you. But I would always use product as described or as designed. Just be careful you don't create a bigger problem for yourself.
That's true. Could be worse. All right. Hang on, Nick. We'll take a break for the forecast, see what we got coming up here in the next day or two or three. And we'll be right back with the remaining minutes of our car care show, 651-461-9226. Stay with us here. News Talk 830. This is WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show, here every Saturday right after the 7 o'clock news break. Denny Long here, along with ASC certified technician from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul, Nick Stoffel. Nick, a bunch of calls and folks saying don't use that bug repellent on headlights. We got one call saying they tried it up at the Boundary Waters, and they're evidently, in some cases, there's like a solvent in there, and it took the finish off their canoe paddles. So we got more callers saying don't use off or anything like with DEET or whatever on your headlights to clean it. Don't do it. In the meantime, let's go back to the phones. Robert calling in from Painesville this morning. Robert, thank you. What is your question for Nick?
Okay, I have a 91 Chev Cavalier wagon. It's just about ready to turn 100,000 miles. And occasionally, when I'm driving down the road, the radio will quit working, like there's no power. And then I've also noticed when that happens, I also lose power for my windshield wipers. Wondering where I should start to pursue that.
You know, she's got a few years on her. I would try to dig some archives, find a wiring diagram, wiring schematic, try to figure out if there's a power source or ground that those two items share, you know, and just kind of start going through the wiring diagram. My guess would be that there might be a solder joint somewhere, you know, as the vehicle's aged and things have flexed and heated and cooled, that maybe a solder joint has gotten loose or deteriorated with time. It might be a bit of a needle in the haystack, but I guess the first thing is get the wiring diagram, get a voltmeter, and just start checking points and figuring out if you can find something that's different or something that's not supposed to be there, and hopefully head you down the right path. But that might be a bit of a challenge and take some time.
Okay. Texter says this, Nick. I own a 2021 Highlander Hybrid. What I am wondering is when a software upgrade or update is needed, are these automatically taken care of, or does the customer have to inquire if one is available and necessary? How does one know when there is an update? Good question.
That is a good question. There's a lot of, like when we have to reprogram a vehicle because we replace a module, oftentimes what we start with is what is the current version of the software that's in there, here's what's available, and here's what's different. So you don't just automatically have software updates, and you don't automatically need them either. So usually it's a fix. So if your vehicle is having a particular issue, there might be something with the software in that vehicle, you would change that to a more current version if available. But it isn't something that you're going to do. It's not like your computer where, you know, Windows tells you you're due for an update and you go through the process and keep going. Cars are a little bit different than that, but if you're having a problem and it's brought up that there's a software update to resolve that, in that case, absolutely. Otherwise, it's not something you should worry about.
Okay. Here's a question we get, as you know, from time to time, Nick. Can I clean the motor and everything else under the hood myself, or do I have to take it to a detail shop?
You know, that's we do it every day. However, we also know where and where not to get it wet. We know where and what not to use the cleaning agents. So if you do a little research, get yourself familiar with all the components under the hood, you're very careful. You know, you're not running it through the high pressure washer. Don't do that. But if you're using a cleaning agent or some sort of soap, make sure it's suitable for that use. And if you, you know, get it wet, heat it up, rinse it off real well, dry it off, you should be able to handle that, but just make sure you just do a lot of prep work. You know, it's kind of the theme I'm always telling people, make sure before you get into it, make sure you know what you're getting yourself into, because you don't want to have a situation where you short something out or the car doesn't run or who knows, right? So just make sure you're cautious and take your time and do your research.
I was thinking about, and you and I've talked about this as far as cleaning radiators, and as I was driving the other day, I thought these cottonwoods were done, and yet I see these little cotton ball seeds flying around. And I was thinking about trying my hand at kind of backwashing the radiator, and I know some cases, depending on the car, it's kind of tough to do. What would you recommend? Maybe you'd recommend me not doing it.
No, I think that's a fair try. You're on the front of the vehicle. You know, keep in mind, anytime you're driving down the road in the rain, all that is hitting the front of the radiator also. So if you're in there with the garden hose and you're gently trying to wash all that away, you try to get behind the radiator or the condenser to kind of, like you said, back wash it both ways, I think that's reasonable. I wouldn't use a pressure washer, just a regular garden hose. And any of that little maintenance does help. Now, if you're having an issue where the car is running hot or the air condition's not working well because of some sort of restriction, that situation, I think you should bring it into the pro so they can take some things apart to get a full accessibility to make sure they get it completely clean versus just a garden hose and somebody trying to get through the little nooks and crannies.
That makes sense. Let's grab one more phone call before we take our leave here. Scott calling in from St. Paul this morning. Hi, Scott. What's your question for Nick?
Yes, sir. I have a 2008 Honda CRV, and one of the tire pressure monitors went out, and I'm not sure which one it is, but I'm wondering if it's a type of job where I can get in there and replace it myself, or are changing the brake pads on the Honda CRV a difficult job, or is it something I could do myself?
You know, as always, I appreciate, I want people to work on their own vehicles as they can. You know, the tire pressure sensor, unfortunately, you need to be able to disassemble the tire from the wheel, so you need to have the tool, the machine to do that, and people don't have that at home. Shops have them. So I would say we would take our tool, we would ping all four wheels, figure out which of the four is not reading correctly, and then move forward from there, taking the tire off the wheel, replace the sensor, reassemble, and reinstall in the vehicle. As far as brake jobs go, if you have the tools, and like kind of the theme, preparation, you know, it's not just taking a brake pad off and putting it back on and going back down the road. When you disassemble, you need to make sure you clean, lubricate. When you're reinstalling all those bolts, they need to be properly torqued. You know, there's a procedure to really anything, obviously, but when you're dealing with brakes, you know, it's really important that the procedures are followed because you need your brakes to work properly, obviously. So if you have the right tools, you have the time, you've done your research, you maybe get a manual or look online, and you follow each step carefully, absolutely you should be able to handle doing that. If you don't have the right tooling or the ability to get all the right information, I would tell you probably to take it and have somebody do it for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Nick, we're out of time. I'm looking at some texts that just came in. Unfortunately, we can't get to them now, but what we'll do is I'll save them, and we'll open up the show next week and address those questions. So I appreciate that from our listeners and your patience. But we'll do that. We'll tackle them coming along next week, first thing, when Nick comes on the air with us. Nick, for those that need some help from Lloyd's, again, how do we find you guys?
Yeah, once again, if you have a question, need advice before you take it in, don't hesitate to call 651-228-1316. And if you're ever on Grand Avenue in St. Paul, we're at 982 Grand. And as always, do check out our website at lloydsautomotive.net.
And Nick, you enjoy some freedom here the rest of the weekend on this Independence Day holiday weekend, and we'll talk to you next Saturday.
Yes, sir. You do the same.
All right. Thanks so much. Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive. Get ready for Jack Farrell's Wine Chat. Jack Farrell, of course, from Haskell's fame. And then Teresa Rooney, who happens to be a master gardener, will be answering all those lawn and garden questions next hour here on our Smart Garden Show on News Talk 830 WCCO. If you have any issues with your car, your truck, your van, and you need to bring it in for service, but before you do, you'd kind of like to know what you're up against, give Nick Stoffel, ASE Certified Technician at Lloyd's Automotive, your question via text or phone call this morning. Denny Long here with Nick. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, Denny.
You're not off with some sports event with your kids, I assume, this holiday weekend.
No, like we said before, we're on there. It's kind of nice to have a weekend with no running from one side to the other side of town.
Yeah, but I bet you have other things to do, though, to fill that time. Just a guess. If you are new to the show, thanks for checking us out. We get new listeners all the time. Thanks to folks like Nick, who join us every week to help our CCO listeners out with any kind of car issues. And as we like to say, before you bring it in for service, you might want to know what could be ailing. And Nick will give it a shot of giving an analysis over the radio. So if you call us or text us, let me give you the number for either 651-461-9226. Well, just a reminder, Nick will be with us till just about 7:45. So our time goes by very quickly. So if you have a question in mind, we'd love to hear from you sooner rather than later. So 651-461-9226. Nick, they're already coming in there this morning as we were getting underway here. And let me see if I can find it. Okay, so Denny and Nick. They love the show. Thank you. This is a Chrysler Town & Country 2009. The headlights are very foggy. Should they try a lens restoration, or is it better just to replace the entire headlight assembly? Now, you and your crews there at Lloyd's, we've talked about this in the past. Is that repairable, generally speaking?
Yeah, so we do have a procedure which takes a good 45 minutes to an hour per headlight assembly, which essentially you're kind of sanding and removing that oxidation off the outside of the lens. After years of the sun beating down on that, the plastic starts to deteriorate and gets that film or that fogginess to it. There are products that we see online that you can try. Will those products work? They might help some. But to really kind of get through all of that, it takes a long time. You need to have all the right tooling and equipment to kind of work your way through that, is the best way to put it. Now, obviously, as vehicles get older, some makes and models, you might be able to find an aftermarket lens that's fairly reasonable. So I'd probably do my research, see what's available for my particular vehicle. If it's somewhat affordable and reasonable, I might try that, or take it into one of your local shop or dealership and see if they offer the procedure to go through and resurface those lenses.
I guess it. I don't know. I have not had the chance to do that myself or the need to do that. But there are a lot of do-it-yourselfers out there, kits, that people have tried with some success as far as my reading is concerned. So, I mean, it can be worth a try, right?
Absolutely, and I would say attention to detail. If you're the type of person that's willing to sit there and kind of work your way through and cover the whole surface, you know, it's not a quick where you're putting wax on and waxing off and it's gone. It's going to take some time. So if you're willing to commit the time and attention to detail, I think you can be very successful. If you're the mindset where I don't have that kind of time, I'm looking for a quick easy on, easy off, probably not the best plan for you.
Right. All right, again, 651-461-9226, any kind of a car care question you may have. Here's another one that just came in. I left a light on inside my vehicle and I had to have a jump last Friday. Since then, it seems to not start immediately as it used to. It does start after just a couple of seconds, but not the immediate start that it usually does. I did get a new battery 4 or 5 years ago. Do you think it's time for a new battery? I'm thinking you might be saying, yeah.
I think you're correct. And as I say, you can answer this one. Yeah, I think in our climate, and we've had a cooler summer and we had a mild winter, so it hasn't been the hardest with all those deep extremes. But with time and with the vehicles that are on the road today, there's a lot more of a demand on those batteries. So if you're getting 4 or 5 years, I think you should be more than satisfied with that. And I'd say it's probably time to pick up a battery sooner than later.
And we've talked about batteries before, quality batteries, and I assume that, and I know you guys at Lloyd's put in just excellent batteries, because I've had a few over the years. But is there a difference in, you know, does the money, the price really make the difference in batteries?
You know, I'm going to say yes, you know, kind of like with everything, whether it's oil, it's a filter, it's a brake pad.
Difference in batteries?
You know, I'm going to say yes, you know, kind of like with everything, whether it's oil, it's a filter, it's a brake pad, a battery. We only install OE-like quality or OE, you know, if all possible, the part, I guess. But, you know, with a battery, for example, we're going to use something that has the correct ratings. A little test that I like to use is the weight of the battery. You know, as technology changes, as we have more recycled items, we have more budget-conscious items, the amount of lead in a battery really kind of determines how long it's going to last. To some extent, obviously, your driving habits and the type of vehicle will affect that also. But, you know, it used to be that batteries were, you know, 45, 50 pounds, and it seems like in some cases they've gotten lighter over the years, and I do believe it's because the amount of lead that they're using isn't the same, which is going to affect the life of that battery. So when you're looking at the specifications of a battery, you'll see that the weight might vary a little bit, and that could be one sign to tell you the more expensive batteries tend to weigh more, probably because there's more lead in it. So, my opinion is something has the same specifications as the car's battery when it was new, possible, and that should give you the same life, that 4-year, 5-year time frame. Sometimes with lesser expensive batteries, you might just get maybe 2-3 years. So I would be very careful.
Very good. Let's grab a phone call or two. I think Ginny's calling in from Edina this morning. Ginny, good morning. What is your question for Nick?
Oh, hi. I have a Buick, and it started fine. As I'm driving down the street, it kind of jerked, and then I went a little bit further, and it gave a little jerk and just died, and then it restarted again and went a little bit and just died, and nothing showed up on the computer. What could cause something like that?
Well, it seemed to me that maybe there's a sensor of some sort, like an input, a crank sensor, or something that's telling the engine or telling the computer what's going on with the engine. And if that sensor's not reading properly, the information to the computer is not accurate. So then the computer becomes confused. Maybe it has a little bit of a misfire or that hesitation that you felt. And then maybe something happened where it didn't like it at all, so it just shut the car off. So I would say, you know, I understand maybe there's no light on now, but if you can get the vehicle running, have somebody test drive it. They can bring their scan tool with for the test drive, read the data that's happening. Hopefully that hesitation, that jerking that you described will happen for them. They can take a snapshot, which is like a picture of the information at that moment, see what is happening, so, you know, see if there's something that's giving out or not reading properly that can lead them down the path of testing a certain part of that system to figure out why it's doing that installing. Last thing you want is to have whatever it is actually just fail, then you'll be stranded.
Absolutely. Good idea. Well, good luck with that, Ginny. Thanks for the call. We're going to take a break. I want to alert Ron and Prior Lake. We're going to be next on the phone, and we have some text messages to get answered as well here on our CCO Car Care Show this Saturday morning. In the Twin Cities, we're now at 65 degrees. We're heading to near 80, and, of course, there are chances of showers. We'll be back here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show here every Saturday right after the 7 o'clock news break. Denny Long here along with ASC Certified Technician, and he runs a place called Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. Nick, for folks that maybe need the help of Lloyd's, how do we find you guys there?
You know, Denny, as always, if you need some advice or something you want to talk it through before you take it into your shop or dealership, you give us a call, 651-228-1316. If you happen to be on Grand, we're at 982 Grand in St. Paul. Stop and say hi. And as always, please check out our website at lloydsautomotive.net.
Always do that, and we'll get you that information before Nick leaves us, which is about 7:45 this morning. So any kind of a car care question, let's hear from you, either by text or phone, 651-461-9226. Speaking of phones, we promised Ron he'd be next, calling in from Prior Lake. Hi, Ron. Thanks for waiting. What is your question for Nick?
Yeah, Nick. Say, I'm in the market for a new car for the first time in many years, and I'm looking at a situation where I'm a senior citizen driving about 7,000-8,000 miles a year. And from a durability and a reliability standpoint, I'm considering a hybrid, you know, like RAV4. And I've heard different things about low mileage with those cars. So I was looking at that compared to a Boxer Forester or Boxer Subaru Forester. And I was wondering if you could comment on terms of the hybrid in terms of, you know, with low mileage, and that just the Boxer, you know, type engine compared to a conventional type engine for durability and reliability.
So, you know, I would say my opinion, for the most part, any vehicle you're buying today, you're going to be fine. You know, I think you should drive both makes and models, see what you like, what fits you the best. You know, I always use the example, do you like Pepsi or Coke, right? I mean, it's, you know, one is the same than the other. Obviously, the RAV4 and the Forester are two different types of vehicles, and the engines are different, and having the hybrid is a difference also. But I don't think I'd be concerned about the hybrid. I think they've done a very good job of making those vehicles reliable. I know you can read many opinions online, but I would say in our experience, we don't have any issues with them. I would also say if you're only doing 7,000-8,000 miles annually on a drive, I would say twice a year you should still change the oil. It might seem a little excessive. I do agree that the oil itself is not going to be used up and not going to be a problem. However, with heating and cooling of our climate, you're going to get some condensation in that oil, which can create sludge. So regardless of which vehicle you do go with, I think if you do a, you know, spring and fall type service on the vehicle, and, you know, even in the months where you're not driving as much, if you have the possibility to take a little longer drive to help kind of clear out the cobwebs, let the vehicle fully heat up. I often use the example, if you're going to the grocery store, take the long way. You know, don't put yourself out where you're going to get stranded. But from time to time, doesn't matter the make or the model, the car needs to stretch its legs a bit to kind of make sure everything is functioning and working as designed. So, but back to the make and model, I don't have a problem with either one. I think both of those vehicles are probably on the top of our list. I would think you'd be happy with either. I would just go drive them both and see which fits you the best.
Yeah, good idea. Again, here's our phone number. It's also our text number, 651-461-9226. Texter says this, I have a 2019 Nissan Altima. The AC works intermittently. Uh-oh. Sometimes cool air, sometimes warm air. What could cause this?
Well, it sounds like it's cycling, which could be a couple reasons. Maybe it's low on refrigerant. If it's low on refrigerant, there's pressure switches that are going to shut it off. So it's working for a few moments. It sees the pressures hit either too high or too low. It's going to cycle it off because it doesn't like what it sees. The other issue could be maybe there's something itself with the compressor. It's overheating or something like that, or a relay that's getting too hot and just opening up because it's not able to keep up, I guess, is the best way to put it. And looking at the forecast, it looks like things might start to warm up here. So if you're thinking about air conditioning, it hasn't been great, you probably want to get in somebody's schedule sooner than later because it's going to go from being fairly busy to a couple of weeks behind where you might be uncomfortable.
Yeah. Tell you what, before we break for weather, let's grab another phone call. I think Vince calling in from Coon Rapids this morning. Hi, Vince. What's your question for Nick?
I don't have a question. I think I just turned it on a while ago, and you were talking about, I think, foggy headlights. I used a kit before, and it took forever, and I read in paper at one time, use the bug spray off, spray it on, wipe it off, and I'll tell you, it worked great, and lasted longer than when I used the kit.
Huh, interesting. Leave it to our listeners, Nick. As you know, they always come up with some good ideas. You think about the chemicals we use, auto chemicals, to remove the bugs. Well, here you're kind of two in one. You can get off bug spray, and maybe it does both. Cleaning headlights. May have to try that.
I would just caution that people would a small sample size. Maybe if you're willing to try that,
good point.
Maybe just do a little corner of it and let it give it a day or two and see how it works for you. But I would always use product as described or as designed. Just be careful you don't create a bigger problem for yourself.
That's true. Could be worse. All right. Hang on, Nick. We'll take a break for the forecast, see what we got coming up here in the next day or two or three. And we'll be right back with the remaining minutes of our car care show, 651-461-9226. Stay with us here. News Talk 830. This is WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show, here every Saturday right after the 7 o'clock news break. Denny Long here, along with ASC certified technician from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul, Nick Stoffel. Nick, a bunch of calls and folks saying don't use that bug repellent on headlights. We got one call saying they tried it up at the Boundary Waters. And they're evidently in some cases there's like a solvent in there, and it took the finish off their canoe paddles. So we got more callers saying don't use off or anything like with DEET or whatever on your headlights to clean it. Don't do it. In the meantime, let's go back to the phones. Robert calling in from Painesville this morning. Robert, thank you. What is your question for Nick?
Okay, I have a 91 Chev Cavalier wagon. It's just about ready to turn 100,000 miles. And occasionally, when I'm driving down the road, the radio will quit working, like there's no power. And then I've also noticed when that happens, I also lose power for my windshield wipers. Wondering where I should start to pursue that.
You know, she's got a few years on her. I would try to dig some archives, find a wiring diagram, wiring schematic, try to figure out if there's a power source or ground that those two items share, you know, and just kind of start going through the wiring diagram. My guess would be that there might be a solder joint somewhere, you know, as the vehicle's age and things have flexed and heated and cooled, that maybe a solder joint has gotten loose or deteriorated with time. It might be a bit of a needle in the haystack, but I guess the first thing is get the wiring diagram, get a voltmeter, and just start checking points and figuring out if you can find something that's different or something that's not supposed to be there, and hopefully head you down the right path. But that might be a bit of a challenge and take some time.
Okay. Texter says this, Nick. I own a 2021 Highlander Hybrid. What I am wondering is when a software upgrade or update is needed, are these automatically taken care of, or does the customer have to inquire if one is available and necessary? How does one know when there is an update? Good question.
That is a good question. There's a lot of, like when we have to reprogram a vehicle because we replace a module, oftentimes what we start with is what is the current version of the software that's in there, here's what's available, and here's what's different. So you don't just automatically have software updates, and you don't automatically need them either. So usually it's a fix. So if your vehicle is having a particular issue, there might be something with the software in that vehicle, you would change that to a more current version if available. But it isn't something that you're going to do. It's not like your computer where, you know, Windows tells you you're due for an update and you go through the process and keep going. Cars are a little bit different than that, but if you're having a problem and it's brought up that there's a software update to resolve that, in that case, absolutely. Otherwise, it's not something you should worry about.
Okay. Here's a question we get, as you know, from time to time, Nick. Can I clean the motor and everything else under the hood myself, or do I have to take it to a detail shop?
You know, that's... We do it every day. However, we also know where and where not to get it wet. We know where and what not to use the cleaning agents. So if you do a little research, get yourself familiar with all the components under the hood, you're very careful. You know, you're not running it through the high pressure washer. Don't do that. But if you're using a cleaning agent or some sort of soap, make sure it's suitable for that use. And if you get it wet, heat it up, rinse it off real well, dry it off, you should be able to handle that. But just make sure you just do a lot of prep work. You know, that's kind of the theme I'm always telling people. Make sure before you get into it, make sure you know what you're getting yourself into, because you don't want to have a situation where you short something out or the car doesn't run or who knows, right? So just make sure you're cautious and take your time and do your research.
I was thinking about, and you and I've talked about this as far as cleaning radiators, and as I was driving the other day, I thought these cottonwoods were done, and yet I see these little cotton ball seeds flying around. And I was thinking about trying my hand at kind of backwashing the radiator, and I know some cases, depending on the car, it's kind of tough to do. What would you recommend? Maybe you'd recommend me not doing it.
No, I think that's a fair try. You're on the front of the vehicle. You know, keep in mind, anytime you're driving down the road in the rain, all that is hitting the front of the radiator also. So if you're in there with the garden hose and you're gently trying to wash all that away, you try to get behind the radiator or the condenser to kind of, like you said, back wash it both ways. I think that's reasonable. I wouldn't use a pressure washer, just a regular garden hose. And any of that little maintenance does help. Now, if you're having an issue where the car is running hot or the air conditioner's not working well because of some sort of restriction, that situation, I think you should bring it into the pro so they can take some things apart to get a full accessibility to make sure they get it completely clean versus just a garden hose and somebody trying to get through the little nooks and crannies.
That makes sense. Let's grab one more phone call before we take our leave here. Scott calling in from St. Paul this morning. Hi, Scott. What's your question for Nick?
Yes, sirs. I have a 2008 Honda CRV, and one of the tire pressure monitors went out, and I'm not sure which one it is, but I'm wondering if it's a type of job where I can get in there and replace it myself, or are changing the brake pads on the Honda CRV a difficult job, or is it something I could do myself?
You know, as always, I appreciate, I want people to work on their own vehicles as they can. You know, the tire pressure sensor, unfortunately, you need to be able to disassemble the tire from the wheel, so you need to have the tool, the machine to do that, and people don't have that at home. Shops have them. So I would say we would take our tool, we would ping all four wheels, figure out which of the four is not reading correctly, and then move forward from there, taking the tire off the wheel, replace the sensor, reassemble, and reinstall in the vehicle. As far as brake jobs go, if you have the tools, and like kind of the theme, preparation, you know, it's not just taking a brake pad off and putting it back on and going back down the road. When you disassemble, you need to make sure you clean, lubricate. When you're reinstalling all those bolts, they need to be properly torqued. You know, there's a procedure to really anything, obviously, but when you're dealing with brakes, you know, it's really important that the procedures are followed because you need your brakes to work properly, obviously. So if you have the right tools, you have the time, you've done your research, you maybe get a manual or look online, and you follow each step carefully, absolutely should be able to handle doing that. If you don't have the right tooling or the ability to get all the right information, I would tell you probably to take it and have somebody do it for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Nick, we're out of time. I'm looking at some texts that just came in. Unfortunately, we can't get to them now, but what we'll do is I'll save them, and we'll open up the show next week and address those questions. So I appreciate that from our listeners and your patience. But we'll do that. We'll tackle them coming along next week, first thing, when Nick comes on the air with us. Nick, for those that need some help from Lloyd's, again, how do we find you guys?
Yeah, once again, if you have a question, need advice before you take it in, don't hesitate to call 651-228-1316. And if you're ever on Grand Avenue in St. Paul, we're at 982 Grand. And as always, do check out our website at lloydsautomotive.net.
And Nick, you enjoy some freedom here the rest of the weekend on this Independence Day holiday weekend, and we'll talk to you next Saturday.
Yes, sir. You do the same.
All right. Thanks so much. Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive. Get ready for Jack Farrell's Wine Chat. Jack Farrell, of course, from Haskell's fame. And then Teresa Rooney, who happens to be a master gardener, will be answering all those lawn and garden questions next hour here on our Smart Garden Show on News Talk 830 WCCO.